Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
And good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Right Stream Tuesday. This is your host, Daria Ann, and I am foregoing the long musical introduction today because I have lots of books and authors I want to talk to you about, and I'm going to probably need the full 2 hours in order to do that. So welcome, everybody, wherever you're listening in the world. I'm so glad you're here, and I'm really looking forward to today's show. So excited. I love promoting unsung talent, as this is in many cases. We have some independently published authors I'm going to promote today, others who are working with new style publishers, but all are talented and all have written books in a variety of genres that will appeal to every avid reader on your gift-giving list this year. So I'm really glad you've joined me. I'm going to talk about some of the reviews that I've done, and I know some of the authors may be calling in. I know Miriam Kobris is going to be calling in all the way from Germany here in a few minutes, but before I get to all of that, I just want to let anyone know who, if you're not familiar with Right Stream Tuesday or with the Right Stream Radio Network, again, my name is Daria Ann, and I am an independent author, editor, blogger, social media marketer, ghostwriter, and internet radio host, and founder of the Right Stream Radio Network, which we started back in March of 2013. So we're coming up on 1 year old already, very exciting. And I started out with two other excellent authors and wonderful radio hosts, Lisa Tarvez, author of the book Just Believe. Lisa is a holistic healer. She's a metaphysician, angelic communicator, intuitive, and she hosts Just Believe Radio every Sunday here on the Right Stream Radio Network. Recently, Lisa moved the time from 1 p.m. Eastern to 7 p.m. Eastern to better accommodate listeners. And every week, she interviews experts in a variety of fields, kind of spanning the metaphysical spectrum and holistic healing. So 1 week, you might tune in and hear from a reflexologist. Another week, somebody who's written a book about reincarnation, as was the case this past Sunday when Lisa interviewed author Frank Mares on the topic of reincarnation. And that was a fascinating discussion. So I encourage you, if you have not heard that, the archive, to check it out here at blogtalkradio.com/rightstream. And also starting off out with me in this little venture called the Right Stream Radio Network back in March of this year was my good friend and military author, historian, and journalist, John D. Gresham. John happily agreed to host Military Monday for the network every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and each week he brings on an expert in the field of U.S. military and intelligence. And John has had some fascinating, insightful, and quite frankly, eye-opening interviews, including this past week's interview with Christopher D. Young on an emerging crisis in China. So if you missed that, again, visit blogtalkradio.com/rightstream, and you can listen to the archive of yesterday's Military Monday, and actually archives of all of the shows on the Right Stream Radio Network. In August of this year, we welcomed Family Power Hour, which is hosted by licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Billy Eisenberg and family law attorney Sheena Benjamin Wise. And they broadcast every Wednesday night here on the network at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And each week, they tackle a specific topic of importance. Tomorrow night, they're going to be discussing bullying and teen suicide with two experts in that field. And so I encourage everyone to tune into that tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern, where you'll be able to call in. This show, Family Power Hour, is not about offering advice. Instead, it's about having people call in and share their experiences, maybe their best practices of how they overcame a particular problem, and also for listeners to gather information from the experts that Dr. Billy and Sheena interview every week. So again, Family Power Hour broadcasts on the network at 7 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday night. And then this past Friday, we had the debut of Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss with your hosts, Lisa Tarvez, Kristen Fetterman, and yours truly, me. Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss is kind of a departure from all the other shows on the network. It's just it's a fun women's lifestyle show where we do talk about some serious topics, you know, including health and wellness and maybe difficulties in relationships. But we also talk about fun things like music and fashion and movies and holidays. And obviously, now that we're into the Christmas season, a lot of our topics are centered around what Lisa calls energy vampires. If you have any of those in your life, you'll know what I'm talking about, and how to deal with difficult people during the holidays, but also holiday recipes and decorating and all sorts of fun things. So tune in to Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss with Lisa Tarvez, Kristen Fetterman, and me every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. And if you missed our debut last week, again, go to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream, and you can listen to the archive of our interview with Tiffany Jamison Vanderluck, who is just an amazing spirit, just one of the most high-energy, upbeat, positive people I've ever interviewed on the radio. And she started something called Yay Me University, and Tiffany is all about helping people to kind of discover the best in themselves and discover their own truth so that they can create the life of their dreams. And she's just a delightful person. So if you missed that interview last week, please check it out. And if you want more information about the RightStream Radio Network, just go to rightstreamradio.com. That's rightstreamradio.com, where we have information on all of our shows and all of our hosts and ways to get in touch with us. If you do have a suggestion for a guest for any one of us, you can email us at info@rightstreamradio.com. And if you're interested in any of the books that I'll be discussing today, although I put some links in the chat room, it's kind of hard for me to play producer and radio host at the same time. So if you're interested in any of the books that I discuss, please go to my blog, DariaDiGiovanni.com, and you can find all of my book reviews. If you just go to the category section in the sidebar, on the right sidebar, you can find all of my book reviews and all the blog posts about the books and authors I'm going to discuss today, as well as links to where you can order their books. And hey, isn't that the best thing, one of the best things about new technology? We don't have to go to shopping malls anymore or shopping centers if we don't want to. You can sit in the comfort of your own home and order gifts for all of the people and special people in your life and yourself and not even have to set foot in a crowded parking lot. And I love that. Like I said on the program last Friday on Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, I think I missed the female shopping gene because although I love beautiful things, I'm not going to lie, I love clothes and accessories, I really don't enjoy shopping. With the advent of the internet, I just find it much more enjoyable to be in the privacy of my own home, not deal with crowds and rude people, and click away and purchase whatever I want online and have it delivered right to my door. I mean, isn't that awesome? So with all the books we're going to be talking about today, that's the best way to order them. Now, I will ask, because there may be the possibility that some of these aren't available in bookstores, but for the most part, you'll find them online, whether it's Amazon, CreateSpace, or on the author's website. So keep that in mind, and I am going to, without further ado, I'm going to move into today's discussion. And first up on the list is the Stone Trilogy. Now, this was written by a woman who's become my friend on Twitter. Here's another social media success story. Mariam Kobris, who lives in Germany, is the author of the Stone Trilogy, which is published by Budapest Publishing, and they're sort of a new style publisher. And when Mariam calls in, I'll kind of ask her a little bit more about that and how they work. But I met Mariam on Twitter, and through that introduction, had the opportunity to review two of her books, so two out of the three books in the trilogy. The one is called The Distant Shore, and the other is Song of the Storm. And when Mariam comes on, I'll have her fill us in on all three books. But I just want to read a brief excerpt from each of my reviews. Now, the first review I did was for The Distant Shore, and this is part of the Stone Trilogy, and it's actually book one of the Stone Trilogy. And I wrote at the time, "This star-crossed love story has all of the ingredients of heart-touching romance, interspersed with mystery and intrigue. centered around wildly successful middle-aged rock star John Stone, who in spite of his stardom has spent the better part of his career pining for his true love, Naomi Carlson, The Distant Shore takes readers on an enchanting transcontinental journey instigated by the receipt of a handwritten letter John receives quite unexpectedly from a teenage son he'd never known. At first, it appears that the protagonist's unlikely reunion after nearly two decades of painful separation will proceed smoothly once the heroine recovers from the shock of seeing her lover enter her remote hotel in an obscure yet picturesque Norwegian town. But the author has plenty of surprises in store for her characters and readers alike as she peels away layers of secrecy and suspense involving the characters' individual paths, personal histories that threaten to harm their future happiness. Merriam's descriptive, rhythmic writing style makes it difficult to stop reading. She has a way of depicting things like human emotion, natural settings, character personality traits, and physical looks, the LA music scene, the closeness of family and friends, and the soul of a creator, musicians, lyricists, etc., in such a relatable way as to compel the reader to want to learn more. Rife with plenty of romance and intimate scenes, the author manages to bring a uniqueness to each encounter, which only serves to make her main characters even more vulnerable and sympathetic. You cannot help but cheer for them to overcome every obstacle that's thrown in their path. And there are many. And that's just an excerpt from my review of The Distant Shore by Merriam Cobras. And then in July, when Merriam released book three of the Stone Trilogy, which is called Song of the Storm, I had this to say. Soulmates John Stone and Naomi Carlson emerge one last time out of the imagination of the author and into the hearts of readers as they continue their tumultuous, unrelenting love affair while fighting to control the persistent inner insecurities that threaten to destroy their hard-fought happiness. Even something as uplifting and joyous as the news of a new baby initially plays out with the trademark turmoil surrounding their relationship. In spite of his undying love and fidelity, Naomi still finds herself bristling at the rituals that characterize her husband's rock star lifestyle, from the shameless groupies to the grueling tours. And in spite of his success and fame, Cobras portrays with striking poignancy John Stone's vulnerability, born out of a long-ago abandonment, one he cannot quite forget in spite of all the obstacles he and Naomi have since overcome, not the least of which being her near demise at the hands of a jealous and demented female. In Song of the Storm, the author also delves into an interesting subplot involving John's longtime manager, Sal, a man who projects his unrequited love for Naomi onto a much younger woman named Maya. In spite of her youth, Maya demonstrates remarkable maturity, refusing to be blinded by the expensive gifts and upscale lifestyle provided by the man who literally crashes into her life. This likable character eventually reaches an undeniable conclusion about the nature of her relationship long before Sal can bring himself to face reality. By creating the character of Maya, the author presents a sharp contrast to the mindless, gold-digging groupies who, completely devoid of ambition and self-respect, live for the impossible dream of bedding a famous but happily married rock star. Sal's conflicted feelings for Naomi and Maya add an interesting psychological study in projection, jealousy, longing, and regret to the story, while the addition of Naomi's cousin Gemma into this unfolding drama brings another level of tension and possibility. As for Olaf and Lucia, Naomi's parents, they return for the final book with the same uneasiness about their son-in-law and his unorthodox lifestyle as they displayed in previous stories. And who could blame them? Having nearly lost their only child at the hands of a jealous, psychotic, and would-be killer, their lingering resentment for John Stone makes complete sense. Given that these are the same parents who stood by their beloved daughter nearly two decades prior when she'd fled from the sex, drugs, and rock and roll scene to raise her child amid the tranquility of Norway, it's only natural they'd harbor genuine concern for her well-being in spite of John's assurances of marital love, fidelity, and commitment. While these familiar tensions unfold in Song of the Storm, Cobras incorporates the horrors of September 11, 2001, to remind her characters of what's truly important in life: family, friends, love, and relationships. The author realistically expresses the reactions of various characters to the terror attacks, accurately reflecting the stories of so many of us who experienced it firsthand here in the United States. From John's raw anger and outrage, to Naomi's palpable anguish during the endless hours of waiting and wondering, to Olaf's act of selflessness on behalf of his daughter, all of the ensuing emotion and action take readers back in time to that unforgettable day. Reliving the intensity, the insanity, the helplessness, the outrage, and the lessons of September 11th, one of the biggest being to live each moment in gratitude for the people we're blessed to have in our lives, through Cobra's well-defined characters, gives Song of the Storm an enduring and unforgettable quality. We're reminded that hope and love spring eternal, as embodied by the two main characters, John and Naomi, and their precious new baby. What a fitting way to conclude the Stone Trilogy. So those books are by Miriam Cobras, and I'm waiting for her to call in. I do not see her on the line here. So I'm going to go ahead and move along, and if she does call in, I will certainly bring her on the line so she can tell us more about her books. But in both of those reviews, which are at my blog, DariaDiGiovanni.com, you'll find links to her blog and ways to order the book in the Stone Trilogy. And again, Miriam is published through Buddhapuss. That's Buddhapuss, Buddhapuss Inc., and Buddhapuss.com, I believe, is the website. But again, you can find all the links to that through my blog. So that is the Stone Trilogy by Miriam Cobras. So anyone have any little kids on their list? Well, I have a great – oh, actually, folks, I think I see her on the line, so without further ado – I'm not sure. I have no way of screening, so this will be a surprise, but I'm pretty sure it's Miriam Cobras. Hello.
Hi, Daria. Hi, how are you today?
Hey. Great, Miriam. How are you?
Fine, thanks. It's evening here, and it's snowing. It's very, very cold, and I'm quite a bit envious of you and your lovely Florida weather. Also, I haven't spoken English in about a year, so I'm stuttering a bit and not feeling quite secure. So forgive me if I don't sound very professional.
Miriam, you sound wonderful. No worries at all. You sound fantastic.
Great, thanks. Since I speak German all day long, and I mean, the English is in my head, but my tongue doesn't, you know, follow my head all the way.
Well, you're sounding wonderful to me. So, Miriam, I don't know if you had a chance to hear me read some excerpts from my reviews.
Yes, I was listening, of course.
So, tell
it was
us a
lovely
bit.
To.
Hmm? Go ahead. No, please go. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, no, it was just, you know, I just wanted you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself and the evolution of this trilogy, you know, in your own words, because we have some guests listening, and I'm sure we have people listening who aren't in the chat room.
Okay. Well, I never thought of myself as a writer, to be quite honest. I didn't start writing until I was 53. I'm 57 now. And I started writing The Distant Shore to spend time while I was waiting for students to come. I was supervising a detention room at a middle school. And during the times when there were no students in that detention room, I started to write my book to entertain myself because it was quite boring to sit there and wait for somebody to show up. And that's actually how I wrote Distant Shore. I was never thinking of getting it published or finding a publisher or go shopping for an agent. That never crossed my mind. I was really just writing to entertain myself. And then I started meeting other writers on Twitter, and one of them told me at some time, why don't you post your page 99 of your book on your blog, because that's a really good way to let publishers see if you can keep up writing a good book. Many start out, but they never go on or keep up the pace or the quality of writing until the end of the book. Finishing a book is a totally different matter. We'll have to talk about that some other time.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what I did, and I published page 99 of my book of The Distant Shore. I went to look what was on page 99, and it was quite a little steamy scene, and I thought, well, I can do that. And so I published that page on my blog, and my publisher saw it, and contacted me and said, when can I have the whole book? And I wasn't even finished writing. Well, I was. I had written 400,000 words because I was just, it was going on and on and on, like the Denver clan or Dallas, you know, just like a what do you call those things, a telenovela or something like that, just going on and on. And so the publisher kept asking, when can I have the book? When can I have the book? And I told them, well, I'll have to cut it down. You see, I have like 400,000 words right now, and I'll have to slap that into shape before I can send it to anyone. And that's what I did, and I cut it down to 136,000 words, submitted it, and got my contract, and that was it.
Fantastic. And Miriam, that publisher was Budapus, for anyone
who's... That publisher was Budapus, that's right. And they signed me for the two other books of the trilogy right away, even before they were written. And that's it, basically. The trilogy was written, it was released. The first two books won IPPI Awards, which is the award by the independent publishers in the U.S. Distant Shore won bronze, and the second volume, Under the Same Sun, won silver. And last summer, this July in 2013, we released the third volume, which you were just friendly enough to mention very favorably. It's very, very interesting to hear somebody talk about your book. It's like you're talking about somebody else's book, and I was thinking, huh, really? That's interesting to hear. That's what people think of my books. It's really interesting, weird, a bit creepy, and very, very exhilarating too. So, yeah, the trilogy is released, and I wrote two prequels to the trilogy. I've written them. They are signed, and they will be released next year. The first prequel deals with Naomi's story before she meets John, and it will be released, I think, in March. And then the other one is John's story before he meets Naomi, and that will be released in fall of next year.
Fantastic. Yeah, will you please keep me posted on those?
I will, certainly. Yes. And since then, I've started out on a totally new project. I'm now writing a mystery novel, which is completely different. It's set on the northwestern shore of Canada, on Vancouver Island, and it's the heroine is a very gnarly blonde woman. Her name is Lisa, and she inherits a piece of land and a hut and a cabin, and she has to move up there to live in that cabin. It's part of the will that she has to live there, actually, and she'll run into trouble, of course. You don't move into a cabin in the Canadian forest on the shore without running into trouble, I would say.
Of course not. Fantastic. So, Miriam, what has that process been like for you? Because it is such a departure from the Stone Trilogy.
I've not given up on the Stones yet. I'm still toying with the idea of writing a book that plays after the trilogy, because I'm I really want to write about the way they deal with the aftermath of 9/11. Since you've read the book, you know that Naomi's father suffers a stroke while he's searching for his son-in-law, John, in downtown Manhattan that day. And they take him back to Canada to the Carlton house, and all of them actually leave the country. And John isn't very happy about it because he really wants to do something. He's offended. He's outraged, as every American was, as all of the Western world was. And Naomi is only with her new baby and with her 18-year-old son. All she wants to do is leave and take them to safety. And I really want to, it's still brewing, but I really want to write a book about how those characters deal with what they saw or felt that day. It's still brewing, and I don't know exactly when I'll get back to it, but I think I will at some point. But I also felt that I wanted to do something totally different, create totally new characters and go to totally new places. I think it's a part of a growing process, the stones were sort of, they taught me how to walk, how to move as a writer, like, you know, my baby shoes, sort of, as a writer. And now I feel safe enough to leave my parents' hands, so to say. I don't know how else to explain it, but it's a move into freedom. Into
I understand that. Yeah, that's excellent. You sort of cut your teeth with that, so to speak.
Right.
You know,
yes.
And now, yeah. So, Miriam, how was it difficult moving into a completely different type of book? You know, what has the process been like with this new mystery book that you're writing?
I'm very uncomplicated, actually, when it comes to writing. I just sit down and start. That's basically it. And then over the writing process, during the writing process, it falls together. I always say that I'm not a plotter, but actually I know I am, because I lie awake at night and plot and think about what I'm going to write. And I want to introduce a new character. For instance, I want to introduce a new character into the book, and I want Lisa to fall in love with him. And I want everybody to think that he is the villain, which he isn't. But it's a misdirection. And I'm still puzzling about how to introduce him into the story so there will be doubt about him, but also some sort of connection to Lisa. So she'll fall in love with him, and people will keep wondering, you know, what is he doing here, and why is he here, and where did he come from, and why is she so intrigued with him, and everybody thinks he's the one who is leaving behind the dead bodies, and it's not really him, it's somebody totally different, and somebody nobody ever suspected of doing it. So that's what I basically do when I lie awake at night. I try to figure these things out, and that's when I plot. It's moving away from the stones and into a totally, it's a challenge. It's like changing your style of clothes. It's like, you know, throwing away everything you've been wearing for 2 or 3 years and putting all new stuff into your closet. That's how it feels like, yeah. And it feels fresh and very entertaining and adventurous. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that's excellent. Well, Miriam, before I let you go, please let everybody know, one, where can they order the Stone Trilogy, and where can they find you?
Yeah, you can order my books from any Amazon at all over the world, both in print, in trade books, with the Miriam very, very nice covers, and in Kindle. And I'm pretty sure you can order them through any Barnes & Nobles, and Barnes & Nobles online, of course.
Excellent.
I can go into any bookstore here in Germany and order them. I've done it. So you should be able to get them anywhere. Yeah. It's kind of sport for me to go into a strange bookstore. And
it must be a wonderful feeling.
Pardon?
It must be a fantastic feeling as an author.
It is, yeah. Our local bookstore has all three books on the shelves, and every time I go grocery shopping, I go into that bookstore and look at my own books on the bookshelf. I know it's a bit stupid, but it's so amazing and totally unreal.
Yeah.
And it's weird. And sometimes I point them out to the bookseller and say, "Do you know that I borrowed that book?" And she, "Oh, really?" it's funny.
That sounds fun. Miriam, and where can I know you have a blog, so let everybody know where they can find you there.
Well, my blog is, you can find me on the Budapest site, basically.
Okay.
That's where all the links are. And my blog is Miriam Cobras, one word, at blogspot.com.
Excellent. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow her at Miriam Cobras. And I'm going to, Miriam, I'm going to put all these links in the chat room, too, so people can...
Miriam _ Cobras, right.
Oh, that's right. Yes, forgot the underscore.
Yeah.
Well, Miriam, thank you. I really appreciate that you called in, you know, for a little bit today and shared, a little bit about yourself and the writing process and your books with our listeners. And I encourage everyone, the Stone Trilogy is an excellent gift for the readers in your life who love romance and drama. And, as I said in my reviews, Miriam, I just love how you You have such an ability to paint a picture and put the reader.
Thank you. You're so kind. Thank you very much, Daria.
Well, you're welcome.
It was a joy chatting to you. I always love talking to you. It's fun.
Well, same here.
You're very magical as an interviewer, let me tell you, because, you know, I'm very apprehensive before I do anything on the phone in English, because I feel so insecure, and you always make me babble and babble and babble, and that's really great.
Well, good. Well, listen, Miriam, you have a Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Thank you, honey.
And I will see you on Twitter.
Sylvia will. Bye-bye.
Okay. Take care. Thanks again.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, everybody, that was the magical Miriam Cobras. I'm going to start calling her that because it has nice alliteration, magical Miriam Cobras. Please, really, go to Budapus.com, purchase the Stone Trilogy, give it out as gifts or keep it for yourself. Give yourself the gift of a good trilogy because it really is excellent. All right, everyone, well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to move into the realm of children's literature. And another Budapus author, some thrillers, a memoir, and even an urban fantasy book. So stay tuned, and we will be back here in a few minutes.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
In a moment, cancer changed our lives forever.
We were told nothing could be done to enjoy these final moments together.
But in that moment, when all seemed lost,
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital gave us hope.
Because at this moment, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital is saving lives with pioneering research and care. We're changing the way the world treats childhood cancer by sharing our discoveries with doctors and scientists everywhere.
And we'll never have to pay St. Jude for anything, ever.
At this moment, she wants to be in her own bed.
I want to be back at school with my friends.
I want to be outside playing.
Please take a moment and join St. Jude in finding cures and saving children. Visit stjude.org.
Can you see?
And thank you, Madison Rising. Hello, everyone. This is Daria Ann, and you are listening to Write Stream Tuesday, a few of my favorite books and authors. We just heard from author Miriam Cobras, and I'm going to move on now from drama and romance to children's books. Now, this next book, for anyone who is a parent, whether you're a mother or a father, if you have kids, even if they're not your own kids, if you have family members or friends, children, anyone you know, any kids that you're close to, this next book is a must-buy. It's a must-read. And also if you're a pet lover, because anyone who has ever loved a pet will relate to this book by author Balazs Szabo. It's called Tweezer Beezer. And I'm going to go ahead and read a bit from my review of the book back in August. In a dramatic departure from his autobiographical and haunting tale of communist oppression, Knock in the Night, author Balazs Szabo has penned another real-life masterpiece, this time a joyful celebration of one very remarkable bird and the family that loved him as one of their own. Drawing upon his experience of living in Hawaii, in his new book, Tweezer Beezer, the author, artist, shares the story of how a minor bird unexpectedly stole his heart and the hearts of his two young sons immediately following a horrific hurricane. Having ravaged most of the natural wonders surrounding the Szabo home, including their garden and the multitude of nests that had taken residence amid the now thoroughly shredded trees, the hurricane also left behind a gift for the family, a vulnerable, hungry baby chick. Although initially the author doesn't regard the minor bird as a viable pet, once discovered amid the rubble, his two young sons successfully convince him otherwise with these heart-tugging words. "Dad," said Dominic, the younger boy, "you are a dad. How can you let a baby die?" Stunned by the remark, the father said to his son, "Sweetheart, I am a human dad, not a bird dad. I could not even teach the bird to fly, even if it lived that long." But the father knew that he had lost the battle and finally gave in. And how many of you as parents can relate to that little excerpt? No doubt, this is an incident that every parent can relate to. The story goes on to chronicle the heartwarming adventures of Tweezer Beezer and his human family, including how the domesticated bird learned to fly, ouch, became quite an attraction at a local bookstore while the family vacationed in Hungary, and developed close relationships not only with father and sons, but also with other family pets like the cat. I was blown away by the intelligence of this minor bird, who not only talked, but actually comprehended what he was communicating. As the author notes, the expression bird brain, at least in reference to a minor bird, is really a compliment. Tweezer Beezer is one intelligent, unique, and loving creature. Written in a humorous, conversational style, this mesmerizing book will make you laugh, cry, and if you're anything like me, utter a few ahs along the way. Although Tweezer Beezer could be considered a children's book, it's an engaging read for kids of all ages. When it arrived, my mother immediately began reading it and literally couldn't put it down until she was finished. She raved constantly about the story, the beautiful photographs contained in the book, and the human nature of its subject, a precious minor bird named Tweezer Beezer. In a world gone mad, a book like Tweezer Beezer is a welcome tonic, a reminder that there is still so much beauty, love, joy, and fulfillment in this earthly life. Of course, there's also a reminder of the inevitability of death, at least in physical form, tempered by the reminder of the soul's eternal nature. Still, if you're able to read Dominic's goodbye letter to Tweezer Beezer without shedding a tear, let's just say you're more stoic than I could ever hope to be. Pick up a copy of Tweezer Beezer today and consider giving it as a present to all of the readers in your life, regardless of their age. And don't forget to like Tweezer Beezer on Facebook. And you can also follow Tweezer Beezer on Twitter at Tweezer Beezer. So I put the link in the chat room, but again, for anyone listening in the archives, just go to my blog, DariaDiGiovanni.com, and you'll find information about Tweezer Beezer there. You can go to the right sidebar, scroll down a little bit under categories, and click on book reviews, and you'll see them all listed there. All right, and I want to move on now to another Buddhapuss author, a woman named Marty Odell Ingridson, who wrote a book called Sweet William. And, you know, I was introduced to Marty shortly after I met Miriam and reviewed her book on my blog. And please pardon the background noise, folks. You know, unfortunately, I'm not in a professional studio. I'm in a home where there's lots of stuff going on, so please bear with me as we have these normal daily happenings taking place. So I met Marty, and her book, Sweet William, a Novella, was just one of the, actually, if I may use the word sweet, but one of the sweetest books I've ever read. Just such a delightful, compelling read that I could not put down. I interviewed Marty on WriteStream this year. And if you want to listen to any of the archives of our interviews, just a reminder, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/WriteStream. I've also interviewed Miriam Cobras, which I failed to mention when I had her on the air. But anyway, here is my review of Sweet William, a Novella, and this is by Marty Odell Ingridson, who also writes for Buddhapuss Publishing. It's hard to describe just how moved I was in reading Marty Odell Ingridson's wonderful novella, Sweet William. Perhaps heightened by the reality of current economic hardships throughout our country, as evidenced by the many friends and acquaintances who are struggling daily to support their families, Ingridson's eloquent tale of a once successful owner of a chain of thriving gas stations and loving family man who's fallen from grace in the aftermath of tragedy is a stirring wake-up call to embrace and appreciate life with all of its imperfections and disappointments. It's also a stark reminder that in the blink of an eye, everything can come crashing down around you. One day you might wake up to count yourself among the homeless after years of enjoying the fruits of your labor, surrounded by the ones you love. Which is exactly where the protagonist William finds himself when the story begins. When we first encounter William, it appears that this rugged but genteel man has resigned himself to his hard scrapple fate, content with foraging for food in dumpsters, traveling in his mind to the beautiful faraway places depicted in books at the library, and living in his crude, cobbled-together, safe place. And here's an excerpt from the book. He kept the important small pieces of his life in the rat trap boards of his hidden safe place, covered with a piece of plastic. The plastic smelled slightly of cat pee and mildew. He had tried being a snail once. That's what he called the ones who pushed shopping carts full of their belongings. He was uncomfortable with the burden of his life, so obviously pushed in front of him. I'm a homeless snob, he thought, and then laughed hard and loud until his sides ached and he could no longer remember what had been so funny. His days were filled by the streets where he walked. Sometimes, if he walked with his head down, he would find things that he needed. He had found quarters and nickels for necessities, nails to hold together his rat-trap abode, and pretty pieces of colored glass just to look at. Most of the time, he saw things he didn't need, like dirty diapers, condoms, and smashed cigarettes. And this is from my review again. But life has another curveball to throw at William, one that will shake him out of his slumber and help him to embark upon the long journey back to emotional health, meaningful work, and nurturing relationships. And again, quoting from Marty's book, he couldn't remember being so scared, ever, even when he got the phone call about Samantha and Tim. Then he wasn't afraid. Instead, he was caught by something black and hard that pushed him down to some place where he didn't feel anything. The feeling of fear that he had now was prickly and sharp and changed the tempo of his pulse, made everything in his digestive tract sour. Even his perspiration smelled corrupt. Detective Jacobs came strolling back in. Mr. Biggs, he said as he handed William back the driver's license he'd asked for hours before, the picture of a smiling William. I'm sorry to have detained you for so long. The child said you're not the perp. William took the license and looked at it. He'd kept it in the hope of one day owning a car again, a car that would take him as far as his dreams. "You understand," the detective continued, "it's important that we check out every story. You're free to go now." He got up and then, as if in an afterthought, asked, "Do you need a ride?" "If I'm not under arrest, I can go now?" William could hardly believe it. He had seen his life move from giant sequoias to years in jail in a couple of hours. He had never felt so free. And then back to my review. Thus acquitted of the charge of child molestation, William finds the courage to face his demons in order to reclaim his proper place in his community. He learns to accept the assistance from those around him who truly have his best interests at heart, including the town's local hairdresser, whose history with William is intertwined with the ghosts of the past and the tragedies that instigated his downward spiral into alcoholism and ultimately homelessness. As the story progresses, William also comes to terms with his romantic feelings for her, which paralyzing guilt had previously rendered impossible. Written in an engaging style, Sweet William's descriptive narrative and authentic characters weave a compelling tale of love, redemption, heartache, forgiveness, and triumph. The author's effective use of poetry, which leads off each chapter as a means of previewing its meaning and purpose, lends a melodious rhythm and irresistible charm to the story. Although just 53 pages, Sweet William makes a powerful emotional impact. But its author hopes to do much more. According to Budapus Inc., LLC, because the protagonist, a guy who might be your neighbor, cousin, or friend, shows how we are all just one crisis away from homelessness, Budapus Inc. will donate 10% of the profits from Sweet William for the first year's sales to the Coalition for the Homeless. The Coalition works with homeless men, women, and families, including those affected by recent Superstorm Sandy, which devastated our area in October. And Sweet William became available for purchase on March 12th, so we're still in that one-year time frame. So if you purchase this for someone for Christmas, you will also be doing something good for the homeless. So I encourage everyone to please check out Sweet William, a novella by Marty Odell Ingbritson. Okay, and before we get to the top of the hour and take another quick break, I'm going to switch gears here, and we are going to talk about one of the most unique thrillers I've ever read, and that is a book called Night Machines by my good friend Kia Hebe, who became a good friend through Twitter, as all of these authors have, actually. Kia really, you know, I'm going to read, and bear with me because I am scrolling down on my blog here and looking for the review that I wrote of Night Machines a little while back. But this book, I can't say enough about it. Kia has such a unique concept. I've never, her book is just unique. I've never read a book like this before with the type of plot and just the whole atmosphere of the book, the description, the characters, and how Kia kind of weaves it all together. It's just a fascinating read. It's a page-turner. And I will warn you, as somebody wrote on one of her book blurbs says on the cover, don't read it before you go to sleep at night. And believe me, that is really good advice. But here is my review of Night Machines by Kia Hebe. Although rife with supernatural intrigue and horror that leaves the reader questioning reality versus fantasy and feeling more than a bit disturbed, Night Machines at Heart is a story of flawed human nature saved by forgiveness, love, and the unbreakable bonds of family. Heroine Maggie Moore has no inkling of the terror awaiting her and her family when she re-enters the workforce after taking time off to mother her two young children with her loyal, dependable detective husband in their middle-class Connecticut town. But the simple act of accepting a part-time position as an editor at a pharmaceutical company leads to an unanticipated reunion with a former high school classmate who, unknown to Maggie, has nursed a 17-year-old maniacal obsession, an obsession he'll go to any length to fulfill, whether it involves delving into the realm of the supernatural, destroying anything and anyone who might stand in his way, or invading his would-be lover's sacred mental and emotional space within. Through the brilliant use of metaphor and descriptive narrative, Kia Heavey expertly weaves the paranormal and the mundane together to create a terrifying and ultimately uplifting ride through the human heart and psyche. While Night Machines features a menacing demon, described in chilling detail, living nightmares, and other paranormal elements to satisfy thrill seekers, it also upholds and champions traditional values in a refreshing departure from the norm. It reminds readers that all of us as members of the flawed human race must deal with our own unique earthly temptations, no matter how devout, upstanding, and grounded we may be. Maggie is a heroine who wrestles with her own inner turmoil, exacerbated by her husband's aloofness in the wake of an unspeakable crime he's under intense pressure to solve. Little does she know that by innocently embarking upon an extramarital affair solely in her mind, she'll usher in a terrifying journey fraught with murder, violence, and Satanism. Thanks to the author's remarkable ability to intertwine the various elements of the story, I was guessing almost to the very end, and yet I never expected the final shocking revelation. Ultimately, Night Machines affirms the transcendental nature of love and the deep satisfaction that comes with honoring one's commitments while simultaneously taking readers on a wild ride of supernatural horror and page-turning suspense. Kia says she wrote Night Machines because it was a book she wanted to read, but no one had written. In this effort, she has succeeded brilliantly. I cannot wait for the release of Underlake in 2014. And you can follow Kia on Twitter at Kia Heavey, that's K-I-A-H-E-A-V-E-Y. Purchase her book at her website, kiaheavey.com. And again, ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for any background noise. Again, when you don't have a studio and you're not in a professional arena, you never know what's going to happen when you're in your home. So, but please go to kiaheavey.com. Purchase Night Machines. I mean, if you have anyone on your list who loves the supernatural, love suspense, this is the perfect gift for them. Kia is also an independently published author, like myself, and I'm really, you know, one of my main goals is to support independent talent, because there's so much unsung talent out there, and although the stigma of being a quote-unquote self-published author, I think has gone away for the most part, there's still a suspicion out there about people who are not published traditionally. And whether you're not published traditionally because the publishing house has an agenda and they don't like your story, perhaps they don't like the themes of your story, the values it espouses, whatever the reason, or maybe they just want someone who's a celebrity and someone who, when they look at them, they see dollar signs immediately and they're not willing to take a chance on a new author, particularly in this economy. Whatever the reason is, we really should be supporting talent, and I say that first because the authors that I'm talking about today are truly talented. This isn't just about supporting an author because they're independently published. It's about supporting an author who is talented and independently published, and in a sane world would be published by a traditional publisher because they are so talented and have possessed the ability to weave together a truly intriguing and page-turning story. But it's not a perfect world, although we do now have social media, which has helped really to level the playing field. So again, that was my review of Night Machines by Kia Heavey. And we're getting to 2 o'clock, and I've got several books to get to, but I'm going to go ahead and take a quick break here. Please stay with me. We will be right back after these messages.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RightStream and hashtag RightStream. Thanks for listening to the RightStream Radio Network. Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the RightStream Radio Network. Tune in to Military Monday with host John D. Gresham, author, military historian, and journalist. John delves into a unique aspect of U.S. military history, as well as current events and issues affecting our men and women in uniform. Featuring exceptional guests, military experts, and authors, Military Monday with John D. Gresham entertains, informs, and encourages listeners to support those who put it all on the line for freedom. Military Monday with John D. Gresham, Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network.
Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis, I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the Right Stream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's LISATARVES. For details on all the services I offer, information on my book, and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
Forgotten Heroes, the independent film that Hollywood refused to distribute.
They were asked to risk their lives in order to save their enemy.
The producers of Forgotten Heroes are donating 25% of all sales to the American Veterans Disabled for Life Memorial Fund.
We need someone to go in there and bring them out.
From first-time director Jack Marino, the home run for America's Vietnam veteran.
They are Forgotten Heroes.
Buy the DVD now at ForgottenHeroesTheMovie.com. That's ForgottenHeroesTheMovie.com.
Honor Flight provides, at no cost to the veteran, the opportunity to see the memorial that the American people have built on our National Mall. And I think that there's probably no better organization out there today that can provide something to somebody for nothing.
If anyone wants to see the importance of Honor Flight, look into the veterans' eyes and how they tear up when they are brought here.
When they walk into that memorial and they see that their friends will never be forgotten, that the sacrifice that they paid will always be cherished, always revered, always honored by this nation. They're taken back by that.
The best program I've ever been associated with. You know, we're all in the same fraternity. If it hadn't been for these guys, I don't know where we'd be today or what language we'd speak.
I say about the terrorist, Al-Qaeda, if it weren't for these guys, we wouldn't have to worry about terrorists today. We'd already be occupied. We'd already be a different country. So we owe them a lot.
We're racing against a clock. In another 5 to 7 years, it'll be a moot point. They will be gone. We're working as fast as we can, but we need so much support from so many people to make these dreams a reality. This is probably the last chapter in their lives. And for some, it's literally the last paragraph of their lives. What a way to end their stories.
This has been one of the really great days of my life.
I'm sure glad I was able to live long enough to see it.
And thank you for staying with me, everyone. You are listening to Right Stream Tuesday, a few of my favorite books and authors. This is your host, Daria Ann. And it is 2 o'clock now, so I'm going to move along here because we have several more books on the list. Now, this next book, in full disclosure, I have to let everyone know, I was the ghostwriter. It's called Reflections on the Ring, An Ordinary Woman's Extraordinary Tale of How She Saved Her Marriage and Family. And it's by Lori Colombo Dunham. And, you know, this book is very near and dear to my heart because Lori is a personal friend of mine. More disclosure, and I actually was around for some of the events that she details in the book. And the best, one of the greatest things about Reflections on the Ring is that Lori, being a very real, sort of down-to-earth, common-sense, warm person, wrote the book with the intention of inspiring other people who might find themselves in a similar situation to hers, not to give up and to maybe try some of the things that she tried that successfully worked in salvaging her marriage and her family. You know, this is an author that went from, you know, an unexpected pregnancy after only knowing her baby's father for a couple of months to a, you know, shotgun wedding in a courthouse, having to, and all the drama and all the sorrow that went along with having to leave her girlhood dreams of the big wedding and the elegant reception in the church, kind of had to leave that in the past. And how she transformed that inauspicious beginning into the marriage and family life of her dreams. And it was not easy. And as most people know, money was probably the, you know, money is one of the biggest factors in trying a marriage, and that was certainly the case for this author. What I want to do, though, is I want to read an excerpt from a review from the wonderful Reverend Bernie Luchtman. He wrote probably one of the most thoughtful reviews I've ever seen of this particular book. Bernie really took the time to read it and reflect upon it, no pun intended, and really understand the author's motivations here. So I'm going to go ahead and read an excerpt from that. Bernie writes, "Reflections on the Ring took a lot of soul-searching, courage, and yes, faith to write. It was encouraging to me to see how Lori never stepped away from her traditional faith and turned it into something proactive that will impact her family for decades to come. I will encourage the reader to grasp the conundrum she faced when transitioning from her dream wedding to the nightmarish, almost mind-altering experience of getting married in a South Florida courthouse in front of a judge. Her emotional conflicts and anxiety come over in the book as she tries to come to terms with marrying a man who bought her a cubic zirconia wedding ring. Here she was with her 110-year-old heirloom wedding ring from her great-grandmother, having recently given up a 2.5-carat engagement ring from a man she discovered she did not love, just to marry Dave in a cold, impersonal courtroom. Could this get any more mind-boggling? To her credit, and here is where the minister in me warmed up to Lori, she turned to the only place she could find comfort and even peace. Even when things were darkest, even when bills were tough to pay, even when Dave was tough to love, she kept the faith. What I loved about this page-turner is the various scripture references therein, which are placed strategically along the narrative to tie into what was occurring at the time in Lori's life. More impressive was her reliance on the writings from the wonderful prayer ministry of Stormy O'Martian, with whom I am acquainted through my association with the Colorado-based National Day of Prayer Task Force. Stormy was once a speaker at one of our prayer summits up in the amazing Rocky Mountains, where praying to our glorious God comes really easy after one beholds the majestic mountains. Here is a passage from Lori Colombo Dunham's book, which I found very uplifting and beautiful. May it encourage you to pick it up and spend a couple of hours reading it. When the unexpected happens, lead with your gut, follow your heart, trail with your head. Live by your conscience and take responsibility for your actions. Be conscious and respectful of his built-in psychological need to escape to his cave when warranted. Always be prepared for God's destiny for you, especially when it seems to contradict your own plans for your life." So please go to my blog, DariaDiGiovanni.com, and you can find this excerpt from Reverend Bernie Luchtman's review of Reflections on the Ring. And there's a link there that will take you to his blog where you can read the entire thing. But thank you, Brother Bernie. Really appreciated that. He was, like I said, he was probably the most thoughtful review we've had so far of the book. And just appreciate the fact that he really gets it. And ladies and gentlemen, this book is short. It's 119 pages, and we included 10 pages of photos, of, you know, family photos of Lori and her babies and Dave and extended family members. And it's just such an uplifting read. We really worked hard to make it entertaining. At the end of each section, there's four sections to the book, we have something called Reflections on the Ring, which is like a bulleted list, which I just read as part of that review. And then after that, my reflections, and that's for the reader to write notes. And then at the end of the book, Lori included the Dunham Family Goal Sheet, which is a tradition that she started with her husband and children, and in which they write down the things that they are grateful for, the things that they're striving for, the things that they want to make happen in their lives. And so it's really essentially a workbook as well as a narrative, kind of like I like to call it a night table book, something you can refer back to again and again. And while I'm at it, I want to just give another shout out to the book's cover designer, my good friend Carrie Lundy, who is based in Tennessee. Carrie is one of the most talented designers I've come across. And so whether you need a logo or a book cover, Carrie, her work is just stellar. She was so patient, particularly with this book, because we went through several revisions on the cover design, back and forth, many late nights, many long hours. And Carrie hung in there with us and was very patient and very receptive and very willing to work with Lori and kind of tweak things, tweak colors and pictures and images and fonts and all that good stuff. But you can contact Carrie through me if you go to my blog and click on contact button. And if you're interested in getting in touch with her, I will go ahead and do that. She also provided the logo for our new show, Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, as well as the RightStream Radio Network logo and several others that I have posted at the blog. So check that out. She goes by the name at Cartoonicator on Twitter, so you can follow her there. And again, highly recommend her. Okay, so let me move on to the next book. Now, shifting gears here dramatically, this next book is called Toilet Paper People, and it was written by author Cherry Tigress. And this is an autobiography, a memoir of Cherry's experience of growing up in an abusive home, especially with an abusive mother. The book was haunting. It was disturbing. I mean, some of the things that this girl went through at the hands of someone who's supposed to love us, you know, our mother, was just harrowing, to say the least. And I even had some bad dreams, I think, after reading this. But at the same time, the book is very hopeful because it celebrates the human spirit and what it can endure with faith and just determination and a willingness to rise above one's circumstances. So I'm going to go ahead and read my review of Toilet Paper People by Cherry Tigress. It's difficult to put into words the full range of emotions I experienced when reading Cherry Tigress' hard-hitting autobiographical tale of child abuse, Toilet Paper People. What started out as a plan to simply start reading late at night and finish the next day wound up taking me into the wee hours of the morning as I could not stop turning the pages of this riveting, gut-wrenching book. I had to keep reminding myself that Cherry actually endured the horrific crimes committed against her by her ostensible mother, a woman she rightfully refers to as that woman, since it's obvious there isn't a loving maternal bone in her overweight body, which is directed by a soul so twisted, it's as if the devil himself whispered ideas in her ear about new and creative ways to make her daughter's life a living hell. No innocent bystander, I felt nothing but anger at her cowardly excuse of a father who turns a blind eye to his daughter's misery while he himself has the luxury of escaping to his high-powered attorney practice every day. The one person with the wherewithal to help does nothing to rescue his daughter from her living nightmare, marked by endless abuses at the chubby hands of her mother for such crimes as having the wrong kind of toes, sporting too much body hair, and not getting her period at the same time as the other girls in their fashionable neighborhood. On that last point, it was actually painful to read Cherry's recounting of her mother violently raping her with a tampon after tying her arms and legs to bedposts with nylon knee-highs. While there's stiff competition throughout the book for the most evil act committed by this horrible woman, which also includes daily, endless verbal abuse toward her little nightmare, depriving her of food and making her believe she'd been abandoned as a child at the mall, that scene in particular filled me with palpable horror and disgust. How could any human being do this to any defenseless child, let alone one they were supposed to love and nurture as their own? At the same time, I was blown away by Cherry's unbreakable will to survive and ultimately escape her miserable existence. Her remarkable strength of will first manifests itself in the toilet paper people, a coping mechanism she devises as a little girl, having been deprived of any toys that might have brought her comfort. Even at a young age, Cherry is resourceful in her determination and quickly discovers new uses for this familiar household product by using it to fashion her own team of supportive, loving champions. Of course, she's also very careful to hide them at the first audible sounds of the familiar, foreboding footsteps coming down the hall in her room's direction. Were her sick mother to discover her daughter had found a way to make the abuse more bearable, she surely would have taken even something as basic as toilet paper away from her. The book also has something to say about rampant hypocrisy, materialism, and the unwillingness of outsiders to interfere in family matters, even when their gut instinct is screaming that something is very wrong. In Cherry's upwardly mobile neighborhood, most people are so wrapped up in their own superficial pursuits, it is easier to just accept the lies served up by her alcoholic, status-obsessed mother and dismiss Cherry as some sort of freak than it is to question this house of cards. Sadly, her parents are also flaming religious posers, attending weekly mass for show as they pretend to be a normal, church-going family for the clergy and congregation. What's even worse is that their motive for adopting Cherry from her biological mother has little or nothing to do with actually wanting a child, and everything to do with enhancing their socioeconomic status. That woman frequently reminds her daughter that her birth mother originally tried to abort her. To call her cruel, vicious, and heartless would be an understatement, particularly when operating under the effects of alcohol. Unfortunately for her, unfortunately for her physically, emotionally, and spiritually abused child, that was most of the time. Realizing that Cherry had been robbed of a normal childhood and adolescence, I was also overwhelmed by sympathy for her and gratitude for my own upbringing by loving, involved parents who raised my siblings and me in a stable, if imperfect, home. Being human means we're all flawed, but I was incredibly blessed to have had something many of us take for granted, a normal childhood. One characterized by the typical trials and tribulations of youth and family, but always built on a foundation of love, respect, and caring. Anyone who can attest to the same ought to read Cherry's book, if only for the experience of genuine, overwhelming appreciation for what they'd been given, a happy childhood. Though robbed of this phase of life, Cherry's courage, determination, and will to survive are inspiring. I was riveted as I read the account of her triumphant escape, which sent chills up and down my spine. If anyone has a right to be bitter and angry, surely it's someone like Cherry. But instead, she has risen above her circumstances and created a full, abundant life in spite of them. Today, she's an author, singer, songwriter, and musician with a thriving career and a passion for helping others, particularly abused children. Please get a copy of her book today. It will horrify and possibly jolt you out of your comfort zone, but it will also change your perspective, give you renewed appreciation for your own life's blessings, reassure you about the power of the human spirit, and encourage you to help children in the same situation. I interviewed author Cherry Tigress back on March 19th and hope that you will check out the archives on Blog Talk Radio and WriteStream to listen to that because it was a fascinating one. She is a lovely young woman, and I'm very proud of her for what she's been able to accomplish. So again, check out Toilet Paper People by Cherry Tigress. Go to my blog, DariaDiGiovanni.com. I've got links there to all the different ways that you can purchase Cherry's book and like her on Facebook and follow her on Twitter. All right, next up, A Pious Man, A Holy Thriller by Declan Finn. Declan calls himself the anti-Dan Brown, and his books are filled with very rich characters, lots of intrigue, plot twists, everything a thrill seeker wants in a book of this type. He's incredibly talented. His books sort of, while he's entertaining readers, he's also sort of debunking a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of persistent myths about the Catholic Church enabling Nazis and being the devil and all those sorts of things. Declan is a member of the Catholic Writers Guild. His books are mostly fiction, as far as I know, in the realm of thriller. As I said, he calls himself the anti-Dan Brown. And you can find out more about him at apiousman.blogspot.com and also follow at apiousmannovel on Twitter. So as I said in my review way back in February, what do you get when you combine real-world history, fictional assassins, Catholic conspiracy theories, ancient hostilities, and complex characters? Author Declan Finn's gripping new novel, A Pious Man, A Holy Thriller. The author notes on his Facebook page, "With this novel, I hope to dispel myths of Catholic history, philosophy, and thought. Yes, the Church of Rome thinks. I'm going to have a lot of shooting and slip in history, philosophy, Catholic apologetics, and even romance just to round things out." And he doesn't disappoint, particularly for those of us who've been disturbed by the spate of anti-Catholic bigotry in the aftermath of Pope Benedict's resignation. But even those without skin in the game will be endlessly entertained by Finn's intriguing narrative, eloquently woven together in a descriptive yet succinct writing style that places the reader at the scene of the action, acted out by a cast of colorful characters whose motives remain suspect until the very end. As Finn notes, a pious man is a mystery with too many suspects. In Rome, a terrorist is blown out the window of a hotel and crash lands on a car at the gates of the Vatican. A figure in priest's robes is seen running from the scene. But the body on the windshield is just the beginning for a team of six unlikely investigators from around the world. Each pair of hands on this case has a past and a few secrets and an axe to grind. They don't want to work together. They don't want this case. And just one of them might be the killer. As I read my review copy, I couldn't help but notice that the author expertly achieved his goals. A pious man kept me scrolling along, eagerly trying to solve the whodunit and anticipating the next violent incident that would propel the story forward. Along the way, I also learned a history lesson concerning the Catholic Church and the Nazi regime, which shed light on the origins of the accusations leveled against Pope Pius XII. As Finn's Pope observes in a scene from the novel, "There are a lot of people who do not like the Catholics, my young friend. If there is absolute proof that Pius XII helped the Nazis, it would do amazing harm to the Church. However, if it is the opposite, then the Church would get to discredit many of its most vocal enemies." Such are the motives upon which the mystery hinges. Later, the Pope further opines, But if you wish to get back to a list of people who hate Catholics, start with anyone who ever raised a gun in Northern Ireland. The German government would like nothing better than to shove the entire Holocaust onto our shoulders, like a former Hitler youth did with a play called The Deputy. The French have made similar noises against us. Then again, they've hated us since, about 1791. Pius merely looked at them casually, leaning back in the chair, which creaked under his weight. Then there are the others. This is me again. I'm embarrassed to admit I'd never heard of the deputy prior to reading Finn's novel, but his ability to intertwine real events into a fictional tale makes this effort not only entertaining but informative. The author also provides copious notes at the end of the book, rife with citations and examples of writers and historians on both sides of the Catholic-Nazi argument. As for his characters, they are a well-developed list of suspects who keep the readers guessing along the way. Aside from Catholic conspiracy theories, the book explores the real-world phenomenon of Sharia law and worldwide jihad, creeping secularism, and the blight of the Catholic Church's pedophilia scandal as its characters race to solve a mystery and bring an assassin to justice. If you're looking for a compelling read that combines historical fact with creative fiction, you'll love A Pious Man, a Holy Thriller. And this book was released in March, and I interviewed Declan Finn originally, back then, and you can check out that archive, again, blogtalkradio.com/rightstream. And speaking of great interviews, I had the opportunity several months ago to interview author M.V. Freeman, whose book is called Incandescent, and this is in the realm of urban fantasy. And I have to be honest with you folks, urban fantasy is not something that I read a lot of. However, M.V. Freeman has such a way with words and characters that I highly, highly recommend her books. And I definitely want to encourage you, if you haven't listened to my interview with her, to go to the archives in Blog Talk Radio and do so, because she's just a delightful person, very sharp, very smart, is not a full-time writer. She's, like many of us, works a full-time job and writes in the evening thanks to lots of coffee and chocolate, which we frequently discuss on Twitter. And her book is called Incandescent, and you can find out more about her at my blog, DariaDiGiovanni.com, as I'm scrolling through and looking for the link to that episode, which I will hopefully find before we go off the air. But you can follow her on Twitter at M, that's M as in Mary, V as in Victory, Free, at MV Free, and listen to her interview with me on the Right Stream Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio. But if you know anyone that's into urban fantasy, they will love her book, Incandescent, and she has other books as well. So check out MV Free and purchase that for the urban fantasy lovers on your gift-giving list. And then we come to one of my favorite books of this year, a book called Just Believe by a woman who has become not only my RightStream Radio co-host, but also a wonderful friend. Her name is Lisa Tarvez. She is an author, a metaphysician, an angelic communicator, an intuitive. She has a master's in holistic healing. She provides all kinds of healing modalities, including Reiki. She works out of her home in Pennsylvania. And her book, Just Believe, was wonderful because it was like a little primer that kind of helped sort of dispel some myths and also explain her belief system, especially as it pertains to angels. Lisa is very engaging, and if you've ever listened to her program, Just Believe, on RightStream Radio, you know that she's very down-to-earth, she's funny, she's very open. There's nothing, stereotypical about her in terms of being a psychic, nothing spooky. She's very normal. She's a married woman with three teenagers, and spent a lot of time in the corporate world before starting her own business. I met Lisa about a year ago online, and that's when our friendship began, and I actually had one of those angelic readings with her, which was very interesting. And when I launched the RightStream Radio Network back in March, I knew that she was the perfect choice to host a holistic healing / paranormal / spiritual broadcast. And, you know, my instincts were right because Just Believe has been a huge success. And I read her book with a critical eye, I must tell you, even though we are good friends. And my conclusion is that everyone's seeking inspiration, motivation, and assurance about the eternity of life and the loving nature of God and the angels must buy a copy of Just Believe to read and refer to daily. Part autobiography and part spirituality 101, Lisa first introduces herself to her readers, sharing in down-to-earth, real language, her experience as a young child with a remarkable sense of the unseen world and the ability to see and communicate telepathically with angels. Having established herself as a legitimate source of information on the topic, Lisa then delves into various aspects of spirituality with humor and authenticity. Chapters include the aptly named What the Heck is a Chakra? Energy Vampires. And I must say, I immediately recognize several people I know who fulfill one or more of these descriptions, and those pesky little etheric cords. There's even a rundown on the hierarchy of angels, archangels, and guardian angels, a clarification of spirit guides, and definitions of various psychic abilities. Throughout the book, Lisa's personality shines through as she moves from topic to topic in her own engaging style. Each chapter begins with a relevant quote. Every single one Lisa selected seemed to have particular relevance for me, whether about a current or past situation or person. In just 162 pages, she manages to distill life's trials and tribulations through a spiritual prism, offering guidance, insight, and practical ways to overcome relationship, health, career, and other earthly challenges we're here to encounter and overcome as long as our souls inhabit a physical body. Many traditional believers may shun her book and reject her belief system, but I commend Lisa for demonstrating genuine respect for other religions while unapologetically exploring and upholding subjects such as reincarnation, the law of attraction, and other ideas deemed quote-unquote New Age, even though many of these ideas predate many of today's organized religions. Other critics have observed that she doesn't delve far enough into her personal story and or that she jumps around from subject to subject with no apparent organization. Neither of these is valid in my opinion. The author begins by sharing her background and her motivation for writing Just Believe before presenting informative chapters on diverse spiritual practices. She strikes the right balance between biography and practical knowledge, interspersing the book with some of her real-life client experiences to underscore her points. Just Believe is an excellent spiritual primer, a book that piques your interest to want to research further, as suggested by the author. For example, on the topic of reincarnation, she references Dr. Ian Stevenson as a trusted source. She also paves the way for future books, building upon a solid foundation and drawing upon her future experiences and successes with her own clients. Get a copy today and Just Believe. And you can find out more about Lisa at her blog, lisatarvez.com. That's lisatarvez.com. And again, you can read that review at my blog, dariadigiovanni.com, and I've got links back to where you can find Lisa and her book. Okay, moving on. Next up is a book that came to my attention because the author contacted me through my blog and asked if she could send me a review copy, which I happily agreed to. And this sweet little book is called The Keeper. And I really liked this. It's another uplifting book for the romantics in your life and on your Christmas shopping list. They will enjoy it too. It's just a nice little read that keeps you engaged and really kind of has you cheering for the main characters. And let me tell you a little bit about it through the review that I wrote back in September. An endearing twist on the rich guy falls for poor girl plot, The Keeper features a young heroine, Caitlin Roseberry, whom we quickly discover has to deal with two tragic, life-altering events at the tender age of 21, the death of her father, her only parent, and the subsequent stroke brought on by the emotional trauma she experiences in the wake of his passing. The story picks up 3 years later with Caitlin dutifully showing up for a follow-up visit with her kindly older doctor, Harlan Melrose, only to discover that a family emergency has necessitated the substitute services of the smug, arrogant, and much younger Dr. Christopher William Seacrest. At the age of 31, Dr. Seacrest has established himself as the chief of staff at the town's renowned medical center and as an in-demand and highly acclaimed neurosurgeon. Despite his professional accomplishments, however, he remains unlucky in love, save for an occasional date with the socially acceptable high society diva, Buffy, a woman for whom he feels a certain amount of affection, though definitely not the kind that compels a man to propose a lifetime commitment or marriage. The prevailing wisdom in the medical center's social circles contends that Dr. Seacrest is simply just too egocentric and consumed with his work to truly love another, yet as readers soon discover, there is much more to this handsome young man than meets the eye, including a haunting secret from his past. As a hardworking waitress at an organic restaurant and an earth worker, recovering stroke victim Caitlin shares the same preconceived notions about Chris Seacrest. That is, until he invites her to attend a medical seminar. This first date leads to an unexpected romance that takes them both by surprise, though from the beginning the good doctor acknowledges an inexplicable attraction to the younger woman. Still, overcoming their own self-imposed insecurities to create a strong, unbreakable relationship will not be an easy task. Whether rich or poor, The Keeper reminds us that all human beings have their own unique challenges to face while living here on Earth. Rife with traditional values, The Keeper celebrates the spirit and determination of the individual, the transcendental nature of love, the beauty of the great outdoors, the perils and joys of friendship, and the importance of faith as its characters struggle to overcome their emotional and physical traumas, put the past to rest, resist family and peer pressure, and move on to a promising future. I would have liked to have seen a bit more thoroughness on the author's part in presenting some of the plot points, including Chris's childhood trauma and Chris and Caitlin's long-awaited reunion after a major event temporarily derails their romance. Overall, though, for those with a romantic soul and unwavering belief in the power of true love and the endurance of traditional morality, The Keeper is a satisfying and engaging read, and certainly a worthy gift for the romantics on your list. Okay, folks, we have four more books to go. Let me go ahead and take another quick break, take a sip of water, and we will be back here in just a moment.
Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock Eastern, tune in to Right Stream Radio Network for Just Believe with author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvis. Lisa interviews experts in the areas of health and wellness, alternative healing, paranormal phenomena, intuitive guidance, and positive living. With her own inimitable down-to-earth style, Lisa makes both guests and callers welcome and appreciated. Just Believe with Lisa Tarvis, Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, here on the Right Stream Radio Network.
No.
My goodness. I just realized my microphone was unmuted. Okay, as I was saying, speaking of independent artists, that song, I Carry You With Me, is by the lovely, talented Ava Aston. Check out her music at avaaston.com, where you can find out more about her fundraising effort, Operation Mustard Seed, which she is using to fund her first contemporary Christian music album. Okay, so moving along here, I want to talk about this next book. I'm very excited to talk about this next book because this is a gift I received, ironically enough, last Christmas from my brother and sister-in-law when they went to a book signing in King of Prussia, PA, with Glenn Beck. But this book was actually originally written by a woman who has become my dear friend. Her name is Harriet Park. And Harriet wrote the book originally intending it to just to be a short story. And her Mad Women Writers Group that she attends weekly said to her, oh, no, this is a book. You need to keep writing this. You can write. And she said, well, I can't write a book. And they said, yes, you can. And she said, no, I can't. It's a famous story that Harriet always tells. And they went back and forth. But the bottom line is, thankfully, they kept encouraging Harriet. And she wrote the manuscript, which was picked up by Glenn Beck. And after several revisions and editing, became Agenda 21. And so I'm going to read a bit from my review of this wonderful book. Well, it's wonderful, but it's also a dystopia. It's very disturbing, and Harriet successfully paints the picture that should wake everybody up. I was lucky enough to have received a signed copy of Glenn Beck and Harriet Park's fictional thriller, Agenda 21, as a Christmas gift from my brother and his wife, who'd gone to see Glenn at a recent book signing in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. Excuse me. One of the best things about Beck and Park's novel is that it provides an entertaining, if thoroughly frightening, narrative of a USA that has been fully transformed according to the United Nations Agenda 21 dictates, though the words Agenda 21 are never employed in the course of the novel. While those who are politically engaged will notice that immediately, those who aren't as involved and informed as they should be, will be transfixed by this tale of oppression, hope, enlightenment, and adventure. The ultimate goal of the authors is to capture the attention of American citizens first with a gripping tale of tragedy and triumph, which will hopefully entice them to read the afterword, where Agenda 21 is explained in great detail, along with practical ways for all concerned patriots to resist it. The day after Christmas, I opened the book and ended up reading all 277 pages in one sitting. This nightmare vision of a statist-controlled future is a compelling, hard-to-put-down, and disturbing read. Reflecting the urgency, hopelessness, and peril of their situation, the main characters speak in short, clipped sentences, revealing just enough to help the reader understand how they and their former countrymen went from being free citizens of a thriving country to slaves of an all-powerful authority known as the Republic. Told through the eyes of an 18-year-old girl who was living with her mother at a compound when the story begins, Agenda 21 chronicles their daily struggle for survival, complete with water and food rationing and the mandate to walk a prescribed amount of hours daily on an energy board, or else face the wrath of the soulless collectivists who basically control every aspect of their lives. A former history teacher and farm owner who remembers what it's like to be free and resents her current nightmarish situation, the mother does her best to shield her daughter from the more chilling facts of life under this new regime. But as the story unfolds, her heartbreaking attempt to protect her child from the state is also shown to be futile. One of the lucky ones, she'd been allowed to raise her daughter, who'd just turned 4, the magic number, when the statists had created a new law forcing all parents to hand their children under 4 years of age over to the government. From that point forward, in keeping with the mandate that all subjects on the compound produce and reproduce, all babies born were to be confiscated by the state immediately after birth for the purpose of proper indoctrination and subservience. Eventually, the mother is brutally taken away, i.e., killed by the state for not being productive, from her teenage daughter, when another resident of the compound rats her out for not walking her energy board and allowing her daughter to do what is mandatory on her behalf. The daughter herself must cope not only with the devastation of losing her beloved parent to the state, but also her own baby, who has been cruelly taken away from her post-labor, sight unseen. Although the daughter, through her mother, has been afforded glimpses of what life used to be like before the state took over, it's nearly impossible for her to fathom, having been a very young child when she and her parents lost their farm and their freedom and arrived at the compound. So, you know, that's a brief excerpt from my review of Agenda 21 by Harriet Park. I do know that Harriet is working on a sequel to this, which I believe is due out sometime in the first quarter of 2014. So there's still time to read this book first, because the sequel, as I gather, I think what she told me is that it picks up right where this book leaves off. And I'm so excited. I can't wait to read it when it comes out. So please pick up a copy of Agenda 21. It's a fabulous read. I mean, you won't be able to put it down, and it's a great gift to give to the readers in your life, and especially anyone you know that really needs to be better informed about what's going on in this crazy, busy world of ours. Okay, moving on, one of my other favorite authors, Balazs Szabo, who is the author of Tweezer Beezer, previously penned a book called Knock in the Night. And Knock in the Night is his haunting autobiographical tale of communist oppression. Now, Balazs lived through it, folks. He was 13 years old during the uprising in Hungary in 1956, and that is when he escaped to freedom, he and his family, although they didn't catch up with each other until about 4 days after crossing the border. So imagine the horror. He didn't know where his parents were, where his brother was. They were all separated, and they were all searching frantically for each other in the days following their heroic border crossing. So anyone who's under the illusion of communism as being some kind of nice system where everybody shares and life is wonderful really needs to read Knock in the Night. You can find out more about it at knockinthenight.com. As I said, this is one of those books, too, kind of like Kia's book, that actually gave me nightmares, except in Balazs's case, it was actually true. I mean, this man actually lived through it and lived to tell the story, which is wonderfully written, and it's a page-turner, and it'll make you cry. I mean, there are parts of it, you know, even throughout the horror, there's the uplifting love of family. There are so many wonderful elements to it, especially the relationship that Balazs has with his grandfather. There's a lot of heartwarming anecdotes in there. But there's also a lot of terror. These people lived through it for real. They had their home confiscated from them. Russian soldiers, I mean, it was just a fact of life that they would barge in on people at any time and demand things, whether it was wine, food, whatever. These were not nice people. This is not a nice system of government. It's brutality, it's oppression, and it is detailed in all of its quote-unquote glory, I say that facetiously, in Balazs Szabo's book, Knock in the Night, which you can purchase by going to his website, knockinthenight.com. I believe you can also find the book on amazon.com. So please purchase that book, give it for gifts, and it is a warning of what could happen when we take our freedom for granted. All right, and lastly today, I want to talk about Wise Words and Witty Expressions by author Renee Gatz. Now, couple of things, full disclosure. One, this was not a book from 2013. I actually came across Renee's book a couple of years ago. But its wisdom is timeless. And Renee, you know, has become a good friend of mine following our introduction by a mutual friend. But this book is so wonderful because it's filled with wisdom that was passed along to Renee by her mother through her grandmother, through her Irish grandmother. And you certainly don't have to be Irish to appreciate the philosophy contained within the book. And one of the best things about it, one of the things I like the most, is that Renee actually has it, the wisdom is sort of categorized through life events. In other words, there's a section about relationships and then the wisdom contained therein, and a section about hard work and belief in yourself and things like that. I interviewed Renee. I interview her every year around St. Patrick's Day. Because it's appropriate to interview the author of Wise Words and Witty Expressions, which is a collection of wisdom passed on to Renee, again, by her Irish grandmother. So every year we traditionally now do a St. Patrick's Day interview. But as I said, the wisdom contained within the book is timeless, and you can find it at my blog, dariadigiovanni.com, and you can also find it, I believe, at Renee's blog. Well, you can find it at Renee's blog, if I can, Wise Words and Witty Expressions. I'm Looking it up right now, you can find it at reneegatz.com. That's reneegatz.com. You can also purchase the book at amazon.com. Gosh, it's on smashwords.com. It's pretty much everywhere. And I even came across a video, a YouTube video, of Renee speaking, I think, to a realtors association about wise words and witty expressions. Renee is not just an author, but I mean, she works in marketing. I mean, she works in the corporate world, but she also does a lot of speaking engagements, and she actually, you know, the book is kind of a springboard for her to attend various functions as a speaker and sort of impart this knowledge with her audience. And she's just wonderful. If you don't know her, you really should. So go to her blog, reneegatz.com, and you can find out more information about wise words and witty expressions and its wonderful author. All right, everyone. Well, I don't know about you. You're probably tired of listening to me. I know I'm tired of talking, but I'm so excited to bring you the best books and authors of 2013 by WriteStream and encourage you to please support all of these fabulous authors. And, you know, if you're so inclined, I mentioned at the top of the broadcast that I myself am an independently published author. If you're interested in my book, Water Signs, A Story of Love and Renewal, you can find out more about it at my blog, dariadigiovanni.com. Click on the link that says book. You can read a synopsis, and there's a link to the Amazon page where you can purchase the book. I also have the first four chapters of my still unfinished sequel, Sea to Shining Sea, on the blog, and you can check that out as well. I want to thank you for your support. Thank you for listening today. Encourage you to visit WriteStreamRadio.com. Find out more about all of our hosts and programs. Please support our show through your listenership. We went to a lot of I don't want to say trouble, but we spent a lot of time ensuring that we created a network that would appeal to a variety of tastes and interests. So whether you're into military history, whether you're into reading, whether you're into spirituality, holistic healing, health and wellness, women's lifestyle, finding out more about coping with relationships and family issues, we have a show for that. And we are looking to have a seven-day-a-week show schedule. Right now we're broadcasting 5 out of 7 days. So if you're interested, if you have something unique you think you want to bring to the network, if you're an author, please contact us through WriteStreamRadio.com or at info@WriteStreamRadio.com, and we would love to talk. Let us know. Thank you again, everyone, for listening today. Thank you for your support of the network. I want to encourage everyone, rather, to keep rejoicing in the flow of creativity. That is so important. Keep supporting good authors and independent artists like Ava Aston, the authors I discussed today. I'm losing my train of thought here. Excellent graphic artists and book cover designers like Carrie Lundy at Cartoonicator. Please, you can find me also on Facebook, Daria Ann DiGiovanni, author. You can like WriteStream Radio Network on Facebook. We also have a Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss group page on Facebook. Follow @WriteStream on Twitter, and also #WriteStream, where we post updates about the network and our hosts. And everyone, just enjoy the season. I'll see you back here next week at 1 p.m. Eastern. And until then, keep rejoicing in the flow of creativity.